Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's Edgewise is John P. Cotter. He and Lauren A. Whitehead are the authors of a new book, Buy-In, Saving Your Good Idea from Getting Shot Down. John is the Chief Innovation Officer at Cotter International. He is the Konosuke Matsushita Professor of Leadership Emeritus at the Harvard Business School. He's widely considered the world's foremost authority on leadership and change. In 2006, Cotter received the prestigious McFeely Award for outstanding contributions to leadership and management development. He's authored 17 books, 12 of them bestsellers. His co-author, Lauren A. Whitehead, is Leader of Education Innovation at the University of British Columbia. John, welcome to Edgewise.
My pleasure, Dave.
So, John, why is it so difficult today to get buy-in to one's ideas?
The generic answer is the rate of change is going up, which means you have to come up with bigger changes inside the firm. Bigger changes require ideas, so you don't go off in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've noticed when I've been out working with companies is that from the bottom to the top, the number of new ideas, you spend 5 days there and come up with a list of 1,000. And how many are great or not, I can't judge. But these organizations all need to make some big adaptations to take advantage of opportunities or to duck threats. And those ideas don't get processed well. Who knows how many ideas get shot down that would really help the firm?
And have you noticed any factors that would explain this? For example, the corporate culture or the leadership style of the leaders and managers?
Sure. I mean, culture that basically says shut up to lower level people, you can imagine what that does. Or if it's not very adaptive to change and new ideas, that'll have an effect. And if the leaders are very command and control, just shut up and implement my ideas, that gets in the way. But what you find is even in the places that have great cultures, you still have the problem.
Right.
The culture doesn't get in the way, but there are ideas that pop up that are really good ideas. Still, they get shot down because people are nervous, people are self-centered, all kinds of motives. But some cultures clearly make it a lot easier than others.
Now, does the background of the individual with the idea influence whether the idea is shot down? Do you need to have a track record of success over time in order to be really listened to? Is there anything along those lines that you've found?
A track record of success gives you a terrific reputation and power. That's the main thing. And fewer people shoot at you. But again, unconscious motives, people will shoot at even people with power, but it helps.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much in this that we've discovered is not specific to a level in the organization, kind of organization, how much power you have. It's just part of the human condition. It's been for ages. It's not just now. But now is important because rate of change is going up. You need more new ideas. And when the good ones are being shot down, you can imagine what effect that has on an organization.
I know the AMA did a survey many, many years ago, but it did show that leaders were not comfortable embracing change. And that would seem to be another factor.
When you say leaders, we're talking about the people on top.
Exactly.
Who often don't offer much leadership. They've learned how to control things or how to manage things, and that'll hurt. But if a lower level person can convince a middle level person who has enough scope within their department, for example, to make something happen, very often if the top guy doesn't like change much, it still can sneak through. But changing a big organization, if the guy on top hates it, good luck. Get another job somewhere else.
Now, there's another issue, and that's strategy gaps.
Oh, yeah.
Often the top person has some ideas, but doesn't sell them to either the mid-level or even the supervisor and his employees. Now, those ideas are not likely to be achieved.
Correct.
So can you talk about that?
There's a difference discovered a while ago between managing change and leading change.
Right.
Harvard, everybody else teach basically managing change. Figure out the idea, execute the idea. And that can work with a certain set of small, medium plans, ideas, strategies, it doesn't matter. But when it gets to be big enough, that process doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly do you suggest?
A totally different thing. It's an 8-step process. Get the urgency up, get a big team together across the organization, get the vision and strategy right, get people to buy into it. empower the folks that really want to make something happen with that, make sure they get some short-term goals, and then be relentless until you get the strategy or the vision to be a reality. And even then, let it sink in a bit to the culture. That's a very, very different process than somebody comes up with a new strategy and now we execute the new strategy. And that is the way people have been taught to think.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with capability or smart or not smart. Mm-hmm. As the world changes more and more and the changes you need are bigger and bigger, it's carnage. And one of the most typical categories is some guys on top or some guys in conjunction with well-known consulting companies really do have an interesting new strategy or idea. And you're right, it doesn't get executed. And the problem is the whole process from the beginning doomed it because they didn't get the buy-in and make sure the ideas don't get shot down, which is what led us to study it and what led us to this book.
Now, in the book, you also talk about the way some ideas, when they're presented, get stalled.
There are four basic strategies people use consciously or unconsciously to just kill ideas, even if they're really, 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 really good. And it's those four that are just very powerful and cover 90% of the strategies people use.
Can you talk a little bit about those?
One is confusion. I think the better we educate people, the more they're skilled at that. On page 45 of your report, line 32, if you remember, a study was done by Herman Miller in 1937. Oh, you haven't heard of it? Let me tell you about that. And the whole conversation descends into something that nobody can understand.
Right.
That's the confusion strategy, or one example of it. There's the death by delay strategy, and it happens all the time. This is excellent. Let's send it back to a committee to clean it up. This is really good, but we're busy ending the quarter right now. There are a zillion ways you can just put it off, and what happens is the momentum you've got going just starts to drop off, and it's hard to pick up again. And then there's fear-mongering, and this is usually done in very subtle ways. You push people's anxiety buttons. If you do this, your job is going to go.
Okay.
And the last one is just ridicule, or at the worst, at the extreme, it's character assassination.
Are there ways to counter those tactics?
You'd think that there'd be an infinite number of ways. They could ask questions or bring up issues. We found there really are only a couple dozen that get used again and again and again. That's probably not all of them. But when you bring it down to that level, then you begin to see how those four strategies get played out. And some of the most powerful ones draw on two strategies.
And what are these?
The most basic one of all is we've been successful. Why change? Worded in various ways.
Yeah.
People can dredge up reasons why you've been successful that you might look at and you said, are you kidding me? There's a very simple answer to that, and that's times change. You got to adapt. Roman Empire, GM, everything else. So success in the past doesn't guarantee anything. And that can be worded in lots of different ways, depending upon the way the zinger comes at you.
Right.
And then you got, what about, what about, what about? You give your idea, and before you know it, the guy asks 16 sub-questions. And you're desperately trying to even keep track of them.
Ooh.
It's kind of a confusion strategy. You'll never get through the 16. But if you came close, of course, he's got another. What about, what about, what about? And the whole thing collapses into half the people in the room fall asleep or they start doing their Blackberries or iPhones.
Oh, yeah.
Even if at the end people nod, doesn't mean anything. What you want is real support. In the head, in the heart, because later on in making it happen, you need people's help as opposed to they're saying, what idea?
So you really need to have support in the audience, people who move the idea forward and forget that this individual or individuals are pushing the idea away.
The basic strategy for countering all this starts with a counterintuitive notion. Don't do what seems natural, which is to try to figure out who those people are and keep them out of the room. Keep them off the email list. Keep them off of the teleconference because you know they're going to be disruptive. Invite them in because one of the biggest problems we all have is an attention problem.
Sure.
Just getting people's attention on something is tough. And the cool thing about inviting in the disruptors is they do zap you, and that creates some drama. This is why you have these TV shows where they invite in two extreme people and they fight. It works. People watch these things. So invite them in, get a little spark going. People then pay attention, and then you've got a chance for really helping them to understand it and getting them to buy into it.
Right. But how do you do that?
You do it by simple, common sense answers. Don't get sucked into this. Well, wait a minute, and 30 minutes later, you're still trying to explain something that nobody can understand.
Right.
Do it with respect. It's so easy to want to shoot back. And then pay attention to the whole group, not just this guy that's hitting you on the head, and do your prep. Don't wing it. This is a big deal, but we still forget to do the prep. And that's where the book can be a reference manual. You can just flip through it. Remind yourself of the most common zingers. Oh, yeah, this one will come at us because of X. So here's the generic answer. How would it be formed here? And that gives you self-confidence, among other things, which makes it a whole lot easier not to get into a fight, but to be respectful to everybody, which gets you points.
Exactly.
People hit you over the head and you're respectful back. People like that.
That's true. So, John, what are some of the usual complaints when an idea is presented, and are there ways to counter those?
There are all kinds of ways that people subtly ask, what's your hidden agenda? It's clear you have something behind this.
Right.
You can just very respectfully say, well, now, I understand why you'd ask that, but that's not fair. Look at the people who have worked on this. This is a good group of people. You know it. Do you think Phyllis over here is a sneaky person who has a hidden agenda? That's just not the way things are. Well, it's hard to come back after this, especially if Phyllis is a respected person in the firm.
Right, right.
Another cute one is, I'm sorry, this is a very good idea, but it's going to generate so many questions and concerns that it's not going to work. As a matter of fact, it's already in this meeting generated so many questions. If there are that many questions, there must be a flaw. It's got to have a problem in it. The clever answer is, well, actually, this is good. You bring up a good point. It shows that people are engaged, that this is an important issue. They didn't care. We'd have quiet in the room. You've seen this. It'll also make sure that we got the idea right.
Here's another interesting one I found in the book. Your proposal doesn't go nearly far enough. What's the answer to that one?
Well, an easy one is, I'm really glad you agree that the proposal goes in the right direction. That's terrific. And I understand your point of view completely. But we're smart people. You're a smart person. We get off going in the right direction. And along the way, if it has to go another mile, we'll figure that out. And we'll figure out how to get the resources and everything to do that. But the critical thing is we agree that we have to go north, and we got to go north soon, so let's get on with it.
Okay, one last attack. You're given a presentation. Somebody raises their hand, and they say, you're exaggerating. This is a small issue, if it's an issue at all.
Right.
So how would you respond to that?
You say, well, I understand why you'd ask that question. But for the people who are suffering because of this problem, and you name somebody who really is getting whacked because of it, you say, for them, it's not an exaggeration. It really is a big deal in their lives. And that puts the attacker in the position of, what are they going to say? Those people don't count?
John, that's a terrific one. Now, I'm just curious. Do you find that body language strengthens your response?
Yep. If there's a disconnect between the words and the body language, you got a potential problem.
Sure.
But if you prepare enough, you'll be more self-confident. And again, be respectful. You don't know what the person's motives are. And if you do that, it'll be not only words, it'll come out in body language too. But if you keep saying to yourself, this is a natural question, it could be a good question, and it could be a terrific person, don't get mad.
Right.
Respect the question and the person. It'll show in your body language as well as in what you say.
Okay, so what about today's world where many of the meetings happen over the phone and ideas might have to be presented over the phone or via some type of web conferencing tool? How do you get buy-in when you can't even see the person's face?
In some cases, I suspect it may even help because you don't have to worry about your nonverbal slipping. Nobody gets to see that.
Right.
So if you're sticking out your tongue, nobody notices.
Right.
And it's not just the words, it's the tone of voice. A lot of information comes through. What we found is it's the same principles. It's the same solution.
John, this book is going to be a huge value to anybody who's presenting an idea, whether to a sibling, your wife, your boss, or senior management.
It's not just at work. You're right. You're right.
We've been talking to John Cotter today. He and Lorne A. Whitehead are the authors of a new book, Buy-In, Saving Your Good Idea from Getting Shot Down. Thanks, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.